EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there. Same airplanes.
And it is
dispatch.
Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
We're about to take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show. I hope you're all doing well. I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. Now I just need to address any US political ads you may hear on the podcast in the run-up to the US elections. So before you email me, I don't put them on. I only upload the show's episode file. The hosting company adds them in after. Ads are geolocated, so depending on where you're listening from depends on which ads you hear and who is their target audience. In a perfect world, I would have no ads on at all, but it is a necessity to keep the podcast going, as I don't have a paywall podcast. I hope this helps, and I hope you understand. Tonight, we meet Tree Frog from the US, and she believes she has the ability to influence people in situations and certain settings, something that might be considered magic to some. Tree Frog is up next. But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to patreon.com/UFO Chronicles podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Hello, Tree Frog. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us today, and you're calling from the United States.
Yep, a little bit of a time change for us, but it works.
Okay, now, Tree Frog, you have a couple of experiences you're going to be sharing. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, ma'am?
Sure, thank you. When I was 17, I went to, one of the school parties. I wasn't really a big partier, and I'm kind of one of the only people that actually recalls a lot of the night. I was sober, so I just, took care of my friends, and it was in the summer in Colorado. It can get cold at night still, just because you're up in the mountains. It got cold that night, and I ended up sleeping in the car with my boyfriend in the back seat very uncomfortably. And sometime in the morning, one of my friends came over. She's like, we got to get out of here. I'm like, oh my gosh, I know there was an accident. We got to go before the cops show up, right? Because we were out in the middle of nowhere and totally away from civilization. No one would come get us. But because of this accident, they're going to be, where were you? Where were you going? They obviously were going to find us. It's a very popular area. But yeah, I know we got to go. And she's, what do you mean, And I'm like, yeah, that they wrecked the car coming back from town. And, we got to go before the cops show up. She's like, how did you know that? Did you talk outside the car? Like, did someone say something outside the car, around the car? She's like, I haven't seen anyone over here. Okay, how did I know? And so that kind of started my, experiences going, okay, well, something weird happened there. And I kind of brushed it off at the time. But as I've gotten older, I've had other similar experiences and other things happen. So I kind of like, okay, that's kind of the first time that I consciously recall something of that nature. And then, you know, I went on with life around 2000. I think it was before I enlisted, the summer before I enlisted in the military. I was with some friends and, you know, we were smoking a little bit of the ganja and we were heading out to a friend's house from one town to the next. And it's high desert, but in that part of Colorado, it's right by the river, the Colorado River. So there are a lot of trees and a lot of, you know, areas that have trees. And we're driving across them. There's this field right next to us, but everything else is trees. And there's this huge light coming down. It was like a big ball of light. And it seemed like there was clouds behind it, part of it coming behind it. And it was going almost parallel to the ground, but coming down just a tiny bit. And I remember I just stared at it. And I was like, guys, do you see this? They're like, oh, that's fireworks. What? I've never seen a firework that looked like that. There was no other fireworks going off. A lot of times in the high desert, they have no burn where you can't light off fireworks because of drought and they don't want fires to start and things like that. So like it wasn't super common to see fireworks in the middle of nowhere. In my mind, that wasn't a firework. What was that? It didn't seem like it was out in the atmosphere. It seemed like it was in our atmosphere, but it was the strangest thing. And they totally didn't even faze any of my friends. And I was, that seems odd, right? So my view of things obviously is different than others. I could be totally wrong, but it's very vivid in my mind. I can still see it. And, you know, something like that, when you start questioning the world around you, I think it kind of opens you up to more things happening. So I enlisted in the military. I was active duty 9/11. That was not fun. It was not a good time for me. Very awful time. But I dream. So I have a lot of very vivid dreams, especially during that time when so much was wrong in my life. So many things were awful. So I had this dream that one of my friends, and my friend was in the dream, he got in trouble and he was not allowed to leave the ship. And we went to a port and he couldn't go anywhere. He asked me to pick him up stuff. And I think it was innocuous things like a backpack and something else in the dream. And I told him about it. And at the time, he was doing things he shouldn't have been doing on the ship. And they were trying to catch him. And they kept asking me, where is he doing this? Where is he doing this? He was sleeping with a girl on board and another guy, like all three of them were having fun. It wasn't allowed on the ship. And our captain was kicking people out if you got caught. So this was the first group they didn't do that with because my buddy was actually a good worker and they really liked him and they kept him. So I was telling him, and then I have this dream and I told him about it. And he's like, oh, does that mean I'm going to be on restriction, which is like the military punishment, you know? I don't know, maybe you should stop doing that. And he didn't, got in trouble, got on restriction. We went to a port and he came to me and was like, can you pick me up stuff? And I was like, yeah, I don't know if that's a self-fulfilling prophecy, something that just, it's going to happen. And it did. So I think dreams are our subconscious way of speaking to us. Hey, moron, you know, like you should have noticed this, but I'm here for you. And your dreams are speaking to you and trying to tell you things. Kind of like I find a similarity to tarot readers because, you know, the words that are used to describe the tarot card always mean something to someone. And that something is personal enough that it relates to what's happening in your life. So the way I kind of view that as kind of the same thing as a dream, where a dream, it has symbols. A lot of times it's very symbolic and those symbols mean things, but sometimes it's very real that you dream something that really happened. My dreams have told me things and I think they're important. So I kind of have the ability to push people away without saying anything. So I know I talked about it a little earlier where I can put up kind of a defensive shield and it's usually pretty close to me, but in situations where I'm alert or I want someone to leave me alone, I can push that out and most people don't know what it is and it's confusing to them and so they back off. So I've never been in a fight, never in my whole life. I've never had to fight. Anytime that I was confronted, they were just so scared of me. It didn't matter how many of them there were, they leave me alone. My sister was bullied and she wouldn't tell me who the kids were because she knew I would take care of it and she didn't want me to get in trouble. And they ran into me one time and I was not scared of them at all. There was a group of them. They thought I was her at the time. We looked very similar. And I made it very clear that that was my sister and they needed to leave her alone. And she started, her life got better after that. But I don't know how to describe it other than it's a defensive mechanism that I just learned myself growing up, always being the new person, always having to be in situations that are generally uncomfortable, especially when you're young and you don't know a lot. I just had this defensive shield and that's what I used. And I used it against my dad because he was very verbally aggressive to me my whole life. And I used to be able to shut down and look like I was listening and I would not be there. I would be gone. I don't remember where I would go. I would just go somewhere else in my mind and not be there. And he would start yelling at me and he's like, answer me. And I'm supposed to give him the right answer. And there were a few times where I wasn't paying attention enough to even know what he was talking about. And he would get mad at me because I hadn't left, right? Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about. Okay, what's going on? And of course, that didn't make him any happier with me, right? So I also had an experience when I was about 14 or 15. It was like one of my first jobs. I watched kids after school until their parents came home. I was their babysitter on the weekends if they wanted date night. And I remember one night, I had this overwhelming something was wrong with my mom. Something was wrong with my mom. And I called her crying. And my mom's like, I'm fine. What are you talking about? You know, chill out. You know, she's like, nothing is wrong with me. Nothing's going to happen. And that was about 20 years before my mom died. And so when you start looking into like paranormal things and things that happen, obviously you're going to run into time travel and CERN and those types of events. So when you start looking at things like that, so kind of the way that I'm viewing that night when I was so young, I think because when my mom died, that just wrecked me. I had a lot of PTSD from the military that I shut down. And when she passed, it all came out because I didn't want my mom to know about anything that I had lived through. I thought it would hurt her too much. And so I just blocked it. And then when she was gone, that reason was gone. And so I had to live through all that I had been holding in for many years. And I think that pain was very strong. And I think, what if that had hit me at one point in time before, right? My mom was killed by using Johnson & Johnson's baby powder. She got ovarian cancer from it and it killed her, which is not super common. We have a lawsuit for it. And she was using baby powder during that time that I freaked out. And if she would have stopped using it at that time, she would be alive today. But I mean, at the moment, you don't know that, right? You don't know why this is happening. You may not understand the reasons, but I feel like a lot of people have these things happen, but they don't question it and then they just forget. And I have a very good memory. I remember more than most people. I have memories from when I was very young. We left California when I was 3, but I remember living there. I remembered every place. I actually go on to Google Maps for fun, and I can find every place, every town that we lived in and the house we lived in. Because my dad was a pastor, the church was always next to the parsonage is what they call it. So it was always pretty easy to find. But I think people are dumbed down enough now that they don't question those supernatural things enough. And I think if they did, they would have a more fulfilling life. Lots of information in a short burst.
That's interesting. So I know it's probably very difficult to describe, but when you push someone away, would that be if there is potentially some danger or they're just irritating you?
Usually I would say it's more in situations where I feel vulnerable and somebody is acting in a way that is aggressive towards me and I don't like it. I push out this wave. I don't know how to describe it, but it's very solid. I had a friend for a very long time who had similar abilities, but she astral walks and I don't do that. I don't feel that that's safe. I don't feel safe enough. So I don't do anything like that. And she's, you have these walls. And she's like, and I just want to be as strong as you. And she tried to take my power once, but that was kind of weird. And I don't speak with her anymore, but other people recognize this. And sometimes it happens too. I have a friend who's very opposite views of me, but she's very, when she talks, she's very middle of the line, right? And she can sense when that shield has gone up, because she'll say something that I completely disagree with. And I do like to debate, so I enjoy debating, but she can sense that. And so I try not to do it around her, because as soon as I do that, she immediately goes on the defensive and stops talking in those terms and starts describing it more. You know what I mean? So it's just something that I've developed over time, that it protects me. People won't approach me that I don't want to approach me. People won't try to pick a fight with me because they'll look at me and go, ooh, that's not worth it. Even though I'm not tall for a woman. I'm average height for a woman. I'm not big, large. I'm not a mixed martial artist or anything. But I can put out that sense of fear. And obviously, it doesn't always work, because I've had bad things happen when you let people in and they don't respect you. Obviously, can't work when they're already, you know, touching me or, you know, holding onto my arm. Can be overcome. But for the most part, it's protected me. It's just a defensive mechanism that, you know, all the times that I say things that I shouldn't say, because that's what I do. I open my mouth and things come out that shouldn't come out. And I think that that defense mechanism was just how I was able to, because I like to experiment. I like to experiment with things. And because we moved so much and I kind of just got to the point where I was like, well, we're not going to be here very long, I started doing weird things, like trialing things with people. One time I didn't correct someone on how to pronounce my name. I have a very unusual name. And I never, ever corrected them. And when we stopped being friends, I was like, oh, thank God, because I just couldn't handle it anymore. So I never did that again. I've done those experiments through life. I did friend experiments. My friend circle is very tiny now, but they are people that I trust with my life, right? And in the situation of always being the news person, you don't have the choice on friends. And I got caught in that, where I was just friends with whoever would be friends with me. And that's not really a smart way to make friends.
You tend to get all types of people that will gravitate towards you. When you're feeling vulnerable, okay, when you're in a situation, you're feeling vulnerable, and you put out this shield, this wave, where does it come from? Does it come from the gut, or maybe from the head?
I think more of like the chest. In Western culture, the seat of the emotion is the heart. And so everything is the heart. And so I feel like it comes from my chest. My brain and my chest go, all right. My brain's like, hey, buddy, something's going on here. We need you. My mind notices it and it activates, I guess.
So kind of like a, maybe like chi, like something like that.
Yeah. I actually think mine is blocked right now. So might have to look into that.
Maybe a clearing out and a cleansing. I know in the animal kingdom, there is, animals can put out certain frequencies. I think when it comes to like big cats, like tigers, I think they have an ability to, like, a frequency out that instills fear in their prey, which makes them a lot more vulnerable.
Yep. Yeah. I know, obviously, settings, I always have something up. If it's a place I've never been before, people I've never met before, but it depends on the context. So my significant other, very strong alpha male, he's not especially large, but he is very well respected in his group of friends. They regard him very, very highly. And going to meet those friends, it was a little bit different because they were all showing me respect. When I showed up, oh, this is your girl. Oh, it's so great to meet you. He's a great guy. You know, they, all of them came to me and showed respect to me because of him. And so in those types of situations, I'm a lot more open because I know he's with me and no one's going to mess with me. No one. He will make sure that if anyone says anything wrong to me, he's going to handle it. So if I'm with him anywhere, I generally don't worry at all. But if I go somewhere alone, there's a lot of immigration right now. And I live in a place where there's a lot of immigrants. I don't generally go anywhere alone anymore. And when I do, it's very quick in out. I don't make eye contact with anyone. Don't approach me, I guess is the best way to put it. I can be very persuasive. I think that's a little bit part of that defense mechanism. I can persuade people. I can use, instead of it being a defensive shield, I can make it be something more, have them be more receptive, I guess. Instead of being on guard, you can open that up and people sense that, and then they're more receptive to what you're saying. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, I've got, well, a bit of an interest in neuro-linguistic programming. It's something I find fascinating. It's something which is used in business. It's used in politics. They use it on the news during interviews and techniques you can use in everyday life. For instance, like if you're, mm-hmm. if you're in a crowd of people and you've got someone talking too much, or, you know, you can do certain things to manipulate the situation to get them to either stop or forget what they're talking about, all that kind of stuff. It's interesting. Neuro-linguistic programming. Now, if you are able to push people away, you know, in a vulnerable situation, are you able to manipulate people in any way? So say, for instance, if there's only one slice of cake left and someone else really wants it. That's just an example, mind. But do you think you're able, with this energy inside, are you able to manipulate a situation to get your own way, so to speak?
Yes, but I generally don't go after cake. It's usually the, I want to do this, and someone's saying no, and I'm like, all right, what do I need to do to make this a yes? My parents said no to me, to everything, because of that Christian upbringing. I wasn't allowed to go to school dances. I had to fight to go, and so I just got really used to overcoming objection, because that was the only way that I could do anything that I wanted to do. So I've kind of just gotten to the point, if I want to do something and someone is blocking that, I will find a way. I will, you know, make the situation what I want. I have like a filing cabinet memory. You know how that people talk about a memory palace and that's how they remember things? I learned them out of a memory palace way later in life than I started this. I use word association. So in my brain, I associate words with each other, and that's how I remember things. I recognize traffic patterns, so I can get through traffic a little bit faster than most. For some reason, my mom noticed this. She's like, you and your dad, you always hit green light when you're driving somewhere. And it's just because my brain has mapped an area that I've lived in for a long enough amount of time. My brain has mapped how to get through to where I need to go in the, you know, easiest way, the fastest way, the best way. And if I am allowed to manipulate other things around me, I can make that happen for other people. So for example, my significant other, I'm like, we need to go shopping at this time. And he's like, no, I don't want to. And so we go whenever he wants. And whenever we go when he wants, it's never a good situation. There's never baskets at the store. There's nowhere to park. There's lines and no checkers. You have to stand in line for, you know, 30 minutes before you can check out. But yet when we go when I want to go, when my body is saying now, this is when we need to go, there's no problems. There's no lines, very few issues getting in and out of a store. So I've picked up patterns that are off of everyone else. And I think some of that has to do with TV, programming on TV. I definitely believe that commercials cause people to respond in the same way. So they all eat at the same time. They all go grocery shopping at the same time. And I am off that system. I don't follow that. I'm the opposite of that. And when you're the opposite of that, you tend to have less.
No, I completely agree. And it's something people need to really take note, because you are manipulated daily. An example would be when you go shopping and they put things in certain places. So you have to walk through the whole store to, say, get milk, for instance. The milk is never at the very beginning of the store. It's always at the very back. The idea is to get you to buy stuff. I also think by being aware of when you're being manipulated, which is pretty much 99% of the time, if you're aware of it, it's less effective, I think.
And I found a way to combat it the other direction, I guess. Oh, this is what you want me to do? Okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do something else.
I'm not going to do what you're telling me. people on here which have various different experiences, say mm-hmm. for people which are mediums, for instance, a lot of time they will have a relative, like a parent which had the same mediumship abilities. Do you think that what you possess is a thing which has come from genetics, or do you think it's something which has come from the environment you're in? So you've built these mechanisms internally because of the environments that you grow up in.
I think it's both. I think I had a predisposition, right? I already had the ability. I know in some families, you see stories and movies about it's passed on by generation, and the families that accept it teach the next generation. But because my family was so religious, like my mom thought it was all demons. It's all demons. Well, maybe. I'm kind of one of those open-minded people. I believe everything and I believe nothing. So I think there's a little bit of truth in everything. And then you have to kind of like sift through it and go, okay, this is obviously true. And this is obviously can't be true. You know, in college, I learned that any book, any writer, it didn't matter what it was, I can make what they say align with whatever I wanted. So, and because that was so simple and easy in college for me, I was like, well, obviously everyone's doing this, right? You can take what anyone says and make it agree with you very easily without having to like edit a bunch. You can make anything say what you want and make it seem like it's coming from a valid source. So I think the experience is what made it manifest strong for me, is because I was practicing. Does that make sense? Like, I didn't know I was practicing, but I was. And it was just something that just over time got stronger and stronger, to the point that now I recognize that now I can go, oh, okay, this is, I used this when I was a kid. That's why I was left alone. I didn't know. You know what I mean? I didn't know I was experiencing life differently than anyone else, other than I had lived more than most people my age for a very long time. I still have a lot more experience than most people. I've been to 11 other countries, 10 on the other side of the world. I've traveled out of the US multiple times. I've probably spent a year out of the US, which is a lot more than most people in their life. You know, they stay in their home country and they don't really go anywhere. A lot of people, I know people who have never left their state, and I'm like, are you kidding me? How does that even happen? You know, why do you not want to see the world? I think the world is magic.
I was the same. You know, I went traveling when I was younger. I went traveling the world. I think it's something which is very important, because it gets you out of the mindset you're in. They do say, you know, travel, it broadens the mind. It really does. It makes you very, very open.
I think when you view another culture that is radically different from your own, and it's successful, and you see normal people who are almost like you, it shows you that the way of life that you know isn't the only way, right? And so if the way of life you know isn't the only way, and there are things you don't like about your life, there are obviously other options. And there's towns here that have been destroyed by tornadoes 3 times in the last 20 years, and people still live there. And obviously you would hope no more, but at 3, I mean, are you going to leave or are you going to stay? And people stay. And I get it. That's your, you know, family home. That's your, where you've lived for generations. But at the same time, like, how do you get into the mindset of, I can't leave this place?
We used to have, still do in the UK, a lot of flooding, especially the area where I grew up in, and have a big flood every few years. The rivers would burst their banks. And then a couple of years later, there'd be new homes built on the floodplains. And I never understood why people wouldn't look at the area and go, maybe you shouldn't live here, or maybe I should move to a little bit higher ground, maybe. But people still do.
Yeah, try to live in areas that are safest. But it's very strange how people who have never experienced anything other than that community, they stay. And I get it. Obviously, if people didn't stay, you know, some areas would no longer have anyone. But I've moved so much, I don't really have any loyalty to home, if that makes sense. History is important when you're looking at Are there paranormal things happening? You know, history is how you can look in. I always see like the images and I never know if they're real or not of like old Aztec drawings and it looks like a spaceship, you know, or Egypt drawings that, you know, look like aliens or something strange like that. And people start correlating information. I think there's even a few that like they have a photo from like the early 1900s and it's a guy who looks like he's talking on a cell phone. Obviously, that can't be real, but it also opens up, hey, is time travel possible?
I've seen that a few times where you get really old photographs, even engravings where someone's holding something. So people automatically think it must be a mobile phone. There's a few problems with that. How would you get phone service for a start if it didn't exist?
Right.
People used to carry stuff. You know, people used to carry pocket mirrors and all manner of stuff. So I've never really, that's kind of frustrating when someone say this must be a time traveler because they're holding a mobile phone. Does it really make a lot of sense?
Obviously, it's something you can debunk pretty quickly in your own head, hopefully.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
I do think as a culture, as a, you know, civilization, I think we're coming to the point where, you know, we're all pretty much connected and we're being manipulated. You know, if big businesses are doing it, obviously there's other things going on that we're unaware of. And I don't know, I think they've done a really good job of dumbing down all of European countries that used to be, you know, beautiful and gorgeous. They're not anymore and they're not safe, some of them. And you know, they're kind of in decline compared to their glory days. And that's kind of how I feel about a lot of the first world countries. And I, you know, in the back of my mind, it's at what point are we're no longer free? I have a good job. Finally, I make decent money, but it's not worth anything now because of the economy and because of everything that's going on. And it feels like I'm working for someone else and I have no choice. I can't go without a job. I mean, I'd be all right because I'm set up now and I'm able to, you know, make some little moves, you know, nothing that's going to be life changing. But I feel like that level of the ability to manipulate others is being used against everyone. I mean, when you elect someone and they say they're going to do something and they don't, there's no recourse for them, but you live it. You know, you're the one who has to, you know, work harder. In my mind, if you work overtime, that shouldn't go to the government. That should be 100% mine if I decide to work more. They shouldn't have a right to that, but they do. They take even more. They take 50% out because they're like, oh, we got to get our money. And I pay a lot in taxes. That's a significant amount. And I know that it's kind of that way everywhere. I don't think anyone is not experiencing that. And if you're not impacted by it, great. But that kind of just tells you who you are on the scale of things, you know?
Absolutely. There's only two things that are certain in life, and that's death and taxes.
Yep. I think people talk a lot about taxes, but, you know, the fact that people don't really talk a lot about death is really crazy to me because I was not prepared when my mom died, and I knew she was going to die. And we actually spent the last, like, day with her begging her to die because she wouldn't go. We got the call in the middle of the night, you know, she's doing the death rattle kind of thing. And we're like, okay. So we all rushed down there and spent every minute with her, took turns, you know, we were allowed to bring her dog and my dog. So we bring the dogs to see her, but she just held on for some reason. And we just begged her for hours and hours. And that was probably the hardest thing I've ever done. And, you know, maybe I did influence her to stay. Same thing happened with my dog. When it was time for her to go, she was still trying to stay because she wanted to be with me. And I kept having to tell her, it's okay, baby, you know, I'll be all right. You know, it's okay. You can go. Your job is done. Your watch is over. Sorry.
It's okay. All right.
But, you know, that strength, did I cause that? I don't know. Maybe. That ability that I have, I didn't want to let go, you know. I had to say the words over and over to mean it, I guess. Obviously, you don't want your mom to die, but at the same time, you don't want her to be in pain.
No, of course not. And it's a very difficult subject. And it's actually a conversation I had with my last guest, who he grieved. It was difficult for him. But we chatted about that for a while. And it's I think, something which people need to address more. And I say that because I only had a conversation with my mother yesterday. She's sorting all the funeral stuff out and what she wants done and all that kind of stuff, which is obviously very difficult. It's not something I really want to hear or have to deal with, but it's something which has to be addressed. It's really difficult. I believe that when our time is over, it's sometimes difficult to people to let go because they have family here and they don't feel it's their time. They want to stay and watch over. So some people, they do hold on, you know, when they really should let go.
It's kind of strange because my mom wanted to die. Deep down, I feel like she didn't really fight the cancer because she didn't want to. She did it. She fought it because we wanted her to, but her heart wasn't in it. A few years before she died, before they lived up in the mountains in Colorado, they got into a really bad accident and they lived and they were fine. But she was like, you know, I kind of just wish we died that day. And I was, that's a terrible thing to say, Mom. You know, I say her passing was probably one of the most traumatic things that happened. And I'm very happy that I was able to live with them through that and make sure she got the care she needed, make sure that the bills were paid for the parents, made sure that they had money and Mom got whatever she wanted. I bought her whatever she wanted during that time. And I got to say goodbye, and a lot of people don't. I got to spend those last moments with her. You know, our whole family was in the room with her. My best friend was the only non-family member in the room. She flew in because I was freaking out. And my mom happened to die the day that she was there. I felt bad about that, but she is a good friend.
Don't think they ever really leave. You know, I think they always stay around in some form or another. Visit now and again, you know, just check up.
I think I only had it happen once. And I just felt her love. I guess it was a dream and I didn't want to wake up, you know.
Yeah. You know, when our loved ones pass, they do visit. You know, I've experienced it before. And they don't always come in the form you'd expect. We kind of expect them to show us a sign, make something move, rap on the door. But they don't always. And I think when loved ones can't or not able to make raps on the door or make sounds in the house, they come to us in dreams. So I firmly believe that. And it's nice that there is always a connection there. And I know I would. When I pass, I know I would visit the ones that remain here.
Yeah, because of my mom's beliefs, I think her stringent beliefs, I think that's why she hasn't been around more, I guess. I think, you know, the need for her had to be strong enough, you know, because she's not into that kind of stuff. So I don't know.
No, I think it tends to be more along the lines of the individual that's left here. So if someone is vulnerable and needs the help, isn't strong enough, then you may see it more. I think because you're probably a lot stronger, you don't necessarily need as much, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. I was always the strongest of me and my sister. My dad, we did foster care in a couple of different states when I was growing up. And the last one, the kids made up a story that my dad was abusive. And so we had to go to court over it and all this. And my dad defended himself and won. But he had me go on first, and the state prosecutor or whatever, the state attorney, tried to come after me and tried to trip me up. And my dad just sat back and laughed, and because he knew that her attacking me like that wasn't going to work. She tried to get me to disprove what I said, you know, and say, and I was, no, I already said this. And she was like, did your dad coach you? And I'm like, no, I was 18 at the time too. So it kind of, I was an adult, right? So I had a little bit higher level than my sister because she was still under the age of 18. But like that lady tried to come and get me, and she didn't even try with my mom and my sister. So my dad's tactic worked because she tried so hard with me and didn't get anywhere that she left my sister and my mom alone when they got in. And we weren't allowed to be in there for any of it because it was closed. So we could only go in when it was our turn to be on the stand. But my dad just laughed about it later. He's like, it was hilarious. She came after you and then didn't even try with the two where it would have worked. And they would have gotten flustered and, you know, upset and everything. And it just didn't work for me.
Well, I'm glad it turned out all right.
Yes. I guess a good example of, you know, manipulating a situation, right? When I leave the room and I go and talk to my, you know, mom and sister, and maybe I was going to scare them, but I was just like, no, no big deal. She's stupid. The whole thing was stupid. It was Trident County and it's a state. They didn't have enough evidence, so they couldn't even take it to state, and you're not allowed to try in a county court, but they did. So it was all messed up.
Would you have any advice for someone, all right? So someone that may be looking to get more insight into this, ways of protecting yourself. Do you have any advice for someone which possibly in a vulnerable situation?
Yeah. So number one, be very careful and just know that whatever you do, you're opening yourself up to something else. So just be very mindful. But one thing that, you know, with dreams, so lucid dreaming is where you're conscious enough to control your dream. So I have been able to switch characters in my dream. I've been able to re-dream a favorite dream when something bad happened, and I make the bad thing not happen and have a great dream. And I think that is something you can learn. You can teach yourself how to lucid dream. So if you can teach yourself how to lucid dream, then you can adapt that ability. So it's a subconscious. It's kind of like you're activating your subconscious. And I think that has a lot to do with how I'm able to do what I'm able to do, is because I'm connected with that and I allow that communication. And because of that, I can manipulate things that otherwise people are like, what? I know people who actually, they have an area on their body that they check to know if they're in a dream or not because they lucid dream so much. But one of the people that I know, he's like, there's a freckle on my arm and in my dream, it's not there. So if I'm unsure where I'm at or if I'm in a dream or not, I look down, and if it's not there, then I know I'm dreaming. So, you know, some people get so far into it that they have to distinguish dream from reality.
You know, I've heard the same thing about checking the time in a lucid dream.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, whether the time is right. So you check time before, I can't remember if you check the time before you go to bed or why does it work? But I know there's something to do with time, which is distorted of some sort.
Have you ever heard of Akira the Don? He's a musician.
No, I don't think so.
He takes speeches from people and turns them into music, like Jordan Peterson, Aurelius, Jocko, a lot of people who have very motivation speeches or, you know, really good things. And one of my favorites, I can't remember who it is. I'll look it up while I'm talking. My favorite is Any Dream You Wanted. So it's a song talking about how, what if you could do whatever you wanted in your dream? And every night you'd have glorious parties. You'd live for 75 years. You'd, you know, meet all the beautiful women. You'd do all these amazing things that you've always wanted to do. And then the next night you do the same thing. And you finally get done with like the partying and the having fun. And you start to travel and you start seeing amazing things. And then the next night, you know, you live 75 years every night, 100 years every night. And the next side, you know what? I want it to be a little more dangerous. And so you start going on adventures. And that's kind of like how life is supposed to be, where you start off young and everything is happy and everything is great. And then you start to adventure out into the world. You know, it's just a different way of looking at life, right? You're like, you know what? I can do that. If that, you know, I do have dreams. I did start off with my dreams being very small, right? And very generalized or localized, and then you start getting bigger and bigger. I don't know. Just my view of things, I guess.
Yeah. So I'm of the thought of intention. So I believe you can shape the future in a way. So I think if you intend, by putting intention out there, you're able to change things, whether it's to do with luck or, you know, whatever. Dreams was something I used to really experiment with when I was a teenager. I would even go to bed a little bit earlier. I'd even eat cheese because it's always said that cheese helps you to dream more.
Oh, wow. I love cheese.
Yeah. Apparently, if you, I don't, it could just be an old wives' tale, but if you eat a load of cheese before you go to bed, you dream more. Now, I think you dream for about, I think, 3 or 4 episodes a night in any case. Even if you don't remember your dream, you're dreaming.
Yep.
Yeah, but that was something I used to really get into.
Yeah, I've had like some extremely vivid dreams where, and it's not super common. Most of my dreams are feelings. I don't always remember images, if that makes sense. But there have been a few that were very, very vivid, very, very violent. And it was because at that time in my life, the people that I called my friends were not friendly to me. And that was the dream. They got put me in a situation that my life was at risk. And I got out alive and no one else did in the dream. So there were other dynamics, but it was very, very violent. And I can vividly see it in my head still right now. And that was 15 years ago or more. So yeah, I think dreams are a good place to start for anyone who wants to try to learn any of that stuff, just because it's a safer place than, you know, astral projecting or out in the real world where there are other variables that you can't always account for when you're at home, you're in your bed, you're in a place that should be safe. Because if you don't feel safe in your home and your bed, then you're probably not safe anyway and should probably remedy that before you start looking at dreams.
And it's always a good idea to, when you go to bed, have a little notebook next to your side cabinet and take notes. So when you do wake up, write down what you experienced in your dream, because it could be a matter of seconds and then you just forget about it all.
I taught myself how to remember those dreams, though, that word association thing. So if I wake up and go back to sleep and I remember a very vivid dream, I think very hard on one word. One word. This is the word for that dream. And then it could be 8 hours later, it'll pop in my mind and I'll remember everything. So I don't write it down. I think of a word and then that word brings it all back, which is crazy in my mind.
And would it be a word that's associated with the situation, or would it just be a random word?
Usually associated with the situation. I would just think of a word in the moment and then I'm like, okay, this word. And then I would fall back asleep. And, you know, I think there have been a few times where it was like a day later, that word would somehow reappear in my mind. I might see it somewhere. I might hear it. Something triggers that memory and it comes all back. And sometimes it takes a little bit longer. So I realized when I start talking about a dream, I start to remember more, if that makes sense. Like the colors come back, emotions come back. If there's any visualization, I can still visualize that. I think I have like a tiny bit of a photographic memory, not enough to obviously recite a page from a book, but that's how I always got straight A's and we moved all the time and school is always changing and always different. I just got really good at memorization and reading something once and being able to recall it and like think about the page and think about the words on the page and I'd be able to find the answer. I am starting to have a terrible memory for things, but it tends to high stress times. I don't remember as much because my body is focused on the stress and not the world around me. Yeah, my system is failing. My personal system is failing a little bit, but just focusing on other things. I'm glad people are interested because I think the more people who understand that these things do happen, they'll be able to start realizing how much it's being used against them.
I agree. I 100% agree. I believe we are so much more than we believe. We have the ability to have more control over our health, our mental stability. I think so much stuff and so much crap, so much junk information is thrown at us daily that we're constantly fighting this stuff off. And I think if we were able to take time out, get off social media, stay away from the TV, just focus on ourselves, we would be able to deal with ourselves a lot better, mentally as well as physically.
Yep. Yeah. That's one of my art projects. I drew something in high school and that's the basis of my art is that drawing. And it's a woman with two faces. And so it's about how like trauma causes us to be someone other than who we think we are or want to be. And the whole idea behind the project is how do they resolve that trauma? Do they become one? Do they stay split? Do they resign themselves to this is who I am? And people don't have that conscious conversation with themselves. Hey, something happened to me and it obviously made me different. Do I want to be that way? Do I want to consciously stay this way? Or do I want to be better? Do I want to move on? Do I want to learn from that experience and make it part of me or not? That brain disconnect between who you think you are and what the world sees you as, right? And making sure that those align.
A lot of people, you know, they build their strengths from trauma. I also think when people go through certain things when they're younger, it certainly does shape you. I know people which have gone off the rails having very small things happen to them. And then I know people which have had extreme amounts of trauma and have turned out just fine. So that's something which has slightly puzzled me, how some people are more able to process the things that happen to them better than others.
Knowing about that, though, and knowing that you can overcome that, sometimes people don't realize that, right? So just, you know, not knowing what an airplane is, if you live in rural Africa and you've never been to a city, you know, how do you perceive something that you've never experienced before? Parents wanting to give a better life to their children. The problem with that, though, is if your children don't live through problems, or, you know, I have a very weird opinion on bullying. In my mind, I feel some of it needs to happen, but obviously not fighting, not physical. But I feel like bullying is how kids make each other stronger. That's how kids grow and overcome things, is by overcoming those challenges when they're young. And now they're, oh, no, don't bully, no bullying policy. And obviously we see that doesn't work. But in my mind, I have a little bit different view on it. And maybe it's because I have that defense mechanism and I never had that problem. But there were times I did feel bullied, but it didn't bother me long term. It's over. I don't care. I have no connection to that. At the time was something that felt very traumatic, right? When you're young, you all have all those emotions you're not used to, and you don't know what they mean. And so I don't know. I think you have to work hard in order to grow and be better.
Exactly. Good stuff. Okay. Tree Frog, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me. Had a good time.
The pleasure was mine. Take care. All right. And we will speak soon.
Sounds good. Thank you. All right. Bye.
Okay, bye for now. That is all for this episode. Keep updated and connected with the show on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Tree Frog for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.